Ladies and gentlemen, put on your 60s goggles. It's time for the Kobayashi Maru Dance Party. With our science officer, Sam Truman, our chief engineer, Neil Gozzle, and the expendable red shirt, Rizia Douglas.
Welcome back to another episode of the Kobayashi Maru Dance Party. I've got my coffee. I've got me my beer. Let's fucking do this.
You've got me beer.
I've got me beer. So, we've got two pretty awesome episodes to take care of today. We're doing the Devil in the Dark and an errand, or just Errand of Mercy, excuse me. So we've got some fan, I think these are some fan favorite episodes, if I'm not mistaken.
Some pretty good ones, I think.
Yep. Before we get too deep into the biz, what's going on? How was y'all's week?
The biz. Okay.
Sam, I told you I have coffee and beer. This is going to be interesting.
Are you double fisting right now?
Well, I'm using one hand to hold the mic, so no. If I had a third arm for ski boxing, that's what I'd use it for.
You should have Build-A-Straws, right? So you can have like a straw going into your coffee and your beer, and then like all come together into one. And
so yeah, what's going on, guys?
Nothing much, just
work.
First day of class yesterday.
Nice.
Hybrid. It's just speech, and I had to buy the books for it because the $20
yes.
one, yeah, the $20 one that I got on Amazon is just a well photocopied version of the book, all in a 3-ring binder.
Nice.
Yeah. So. Had to go spend $200 on the whole kit and caboodle because it's got activity books that I need to do. Ugh.
Goddamn activity books. I wish they could just like, here, print this shit out and pay us
$10. I know, right? Well, the terrible part is it was just published this year. So they have no used copies. Used copies, it's gone.
Half of the books I purchased when I was in college were exactly like that. It's such a racket.
I don't understand why they just don't go digital, because A, we can buy a lot more, store it, and we don't have to lug around like 80 books or something.
And it would be cheaper on the student.
Well, yeah, but that's the whole point. Like, it's,
yeah, I know. I'm just,
it's a racket.
Consumer friendly.
They have like, I don't want to say a monopoly, but yeah, we're not really, really consumer friendly to students right now.
Yeah. So, this semester, for just the one class, I had to pay $500.
God damn.
Just for one class, and that's including the book, not including my school supplies.
Is this ACC or UT?
This is ACC.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yep, and I don't have any financial aid. They gave me financial aid, and then I found out it was just a student loan for a ridiculously low amount, and I was like, you know what? Let me just pay for it out of pocket.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to...
Whenever possible, avoid student loans.
So yeah, so that's pretty much like the only exciting part of my week. And by exciting, I mean just disappointing.
All right, Sam, what about you?
I got drunk and passed out for a whole day and got pretty pissed off about it. The end.
Was this when you found out about beer, or was that last week?
No. I knew when to stop for the beer. Thank God.
He did come home pretty drunk.
Yeah. It was really bad. But I had fun, and that was... You had fun, you paid for it. I blamed the people that I was hanging out with, because I was having fun. So.
To not watch over you?
No, just that we were having fun.
And, oh, okay.
I'm so mad at you, because you let me have fun!
Pretty much. What about you, Neil?
I'm trying to think what's been going on since then. Not much. I'm super excited about Rome 2. I have it preloaded onto my Steam, so as soon as that drops, I will be taking over ancient.
And we won't see you for like...
No, I'll be dead to the world for a while. I'm still gonna be good for the podcast that week. I think I can.
Oh, okay.
I can crawl out of my cave for that.
You just close down the program and open up Skype for that.
Yeah.
You'll just be playing Rome while we do the...
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, whatever, Kirk does that. Okay, hold on. Okay, yeah. Aside from that, not too much. I've been dabbling a little more in Kerbal. Yeah, I can't really think of anything worse. I'm going to start doing some overtime at work today, so I'm going to have... Not today, but next week, so I'm going to have even less of a life. But yeah, it's been pretty quiet week.
Nice.
All around, it sounds like, which isn't bad. Sometimes uneventful is good. But
agreed.
Yep. All right. So I guess you guys want to jump into the episodes?
Yes.
Let's do it. Working. All right. First episode we are doing is called The Devil in the Dark. Let's check out the trailer.
Captain's log, stardate 3196.1. A distress call has brought the Enterprise to Janus 6.
When that creature appears, men die.
Describe it.
I can't. I only got a glimpse of it.
Ed shot it.
A good, clean shot. Didn't even slow it down.
Captain, we are being watched.
Almost as if he'd been thrown into a vat of acid.
Strong enough to eat machinery?
Strong enough to eat anything.
That murdering monster's in there.
You're going to stay here.
Intense. Nice.
You know, for a show that tries to really hide the monster most of the time, they just like, show the crap out of it.
Oh my god! Well, in the beginning of the episode, they didn't. Not so much.
That's because the beginning it was like the mystery. Like I totally thought they were going to go sci-fi horror on this.
Yeah. Well, they did like the old school horror movie campy, like, oh, point of view cameras, the monster, and takes out a dude, and he screams, and all of a sudden the screen goes black.
That means he had sex with the monster. Whenever a screen goes black, that's what it means.
And apparently, since the, you know, they were burned, it was pretty hot. All right.
You can't see it, but I'm shaking my head.
All right. So I lumped the teaser and the act one together. So here we go. A group of brave space miners relieve one of their own that was guarding an area from an unknown baddie. Because nobody believes in the buddy system, the replacement dies. The Enterprise is on the case. We learn that this creature has been killing on this mining colony for 3 weeks. Phaser fire does not seem to affect it. We have a full-fledged horror episode on our hands. While the three men consider what's happened in the chief's office, the creature strikes yet again. Oh, also, Spock is fascinated by a silicon nodule. Note to self, this will be important in the future.
So, I have to say, I love this set.
Like the mining area?
Yeah. I really love this set. And then, you know, including the silicon nodules that are there, I just think it was all extremely well done.
Yeah, I agree.
I really enjoy this set. Well, later on we see some tunnels that kind of look too good to be true, but...
Yeah.
But I
like the set and I like the music too.
Really like it, yeah.
It was nice dramatic music that wasn't, you know, the Corbomite maneuver music.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I like that Corbomite music. It's good. It's good. Yep. Anywho's. So I like how they mentioned that 50 people had died.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that I like it. I'm just saying I find it entertaining because, like, where the fuck? I understand it's a mining colony, but where the fuck do they keep getting these replacements?
That, and it's like, if it's killed that many people, why are you leaving people alone?
Yeah,
like,
right?
You've got, especially, like, a cohort of dudes just walking around.
That one guy, and then you know, like, got the monster cam, and he's just like, doop, and then he died.
Like, is it just me, or would it make more sense to keep every, like, the big group stationary and then send out scouting parties?
Exactly. And why don't they have, like, I don't know, security perimeters set up?
I don't know. Because it's just mining, but, you know, I guess they weren't expecting it.
They still should have safety protocols, especially when there's 50 people that died within the last couple months. I don't know about you. I believe that's a really high number.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised none of y'all mentioned the fact that it's really interesting that we actually start with an opening that's not on the
ship. That's not on the ship. I thought of that when I first saw the.
I was going to bring that up next. Okay. Thank you for stealing my thunder, Sam. This is the one and only time in the original series that this happens where we do not see the Enterprise and its crew in the intro.
Okay.
That's cool. That's awesome. So a bit about the guy that they left. He's all like, oh, but, you know, the monster. And he's like, no, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then,
of course,
of course, he gets killed. And then I wanted like the chief guy to be like, oh, and he was just 3 days from retirement. like one of those characters.
2 days from earning his wings. Poor Speedy.
Poor Speedy. But yeah, with Act One, like when they were talking about, all the different minerals that were on the planet in the chief's office, like, you know, I can't remember if it was like Pergium or something like that, was the main one they were going, but there was everything. There was gold, there was palladium or polonium or something like that.
Palladium.
Something. I was like, man, I would have, if this planet was in Mass Effect, I would just spend hours just mining or probing the crap out of it to get all of the resources.
Gotta love probing planets.
I also thought it was interesting that they described the monster as big and shaggy.
Yeah. It was, especially when you see the monster later.
Yeah.
I don't feel that it's shaggy. But
it's
got
a little fringe, but I mean, they made it sound like Clifford the Big Red Dog was the monster.
See, I thought... When I heard that, I thought of the old, like, Looney Tunes hair monster, you know, the big red one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what was his name? He had a name.
I think it was Red.
I think that's what they called him, yeah.
Yeah. But that's what I thought of, and it was like, oh, that's weird. But you know what? When you know, McCoy studies the victims or whatever, and he says that whatever they're being attacked with, it's an extremely corrosive acid, like... That's a really shitty way to die.
I wrote that down too. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's gotta
be melting.
Yeah, yeah. And also that it's phaser proof.
This is kind of a big obstacle. Like they've never really faced anything that. Well, no, they took away the Kirk's phaser against the Gorn.
So we got like a big, shaggy, acid spitting, phaser proof monster, like. What the fuck?
That appears and disappears.
Exactly. Like, just all of a sudden. And then
They did a really good job setting that, like, up the mood. Like, I really thought this was going to be a horror episode.
I think one of the... Vanderberg says a line, like, the head of the minor whatever's colony. Mm-hmm.
When that creature appears, men die.
And it's such a simple line, and it has so much...
Meaning like,
ominousness,
yeah,
to it. But so, however, as we continue on, because it's 60s future and kind of the show's kind of campy. Mm-hmm. Like all I could think of is like when these people are dying, just really bad lines, like "Oh, and another one bites the dust."
Another one bites dust.
Yeah. So
bites the corrosive spitted dust.
Well, it's kind of weird that they talk about acid, yet what's left is like. Dust, maybe teeth in it.
So then,
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, am I jumping ahead because I'm getting to the part where Spock talks about the silicon nodules?
That's a little ahead. That's in Act Two, but
I don't think so. He notices it in Act One.
I don't remember.
He doesn't like. He doesn't expand on it, but he was like, "Hey, this is a cool thing."
Yeah, well, Act 2 is when he figures out the creature
solidifies. Yeah. Well, I kind of suspected that it was when they said, oh, there's tons of them everywhere.
Oh, and, yeah, like they made such a point.
Yeah, so like, hey, you know, red alert.
Yeah. So, you know, before we move on to the next act, when that thing takes out the nuclear reactor...
Mm-hmm.
And takes out that main circulating pump, and they're like, oh, without that, the whole planet will become irradiated. And they have a choice between, technically, they have three choices, but in the show, they only say two. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the planet will become irradiated and everyone will die, or get eaten up by a big monster.
Yeah, oh,
or
yeah.
Not eaten like, up, but spit on.
Yeah.
And I was just like, really? But, you know, I just think it's kind of interesting how that happens or why the monster would, you know, attack that specific reactor and take out the one thing that could kill all humans.
Mm-hmm. It's smart. I have a quote here. It's not from Star Trek, but it applies, kind of. You fear to go into the mines. The dwarves delved too greedily and too deep. You know what they awoke in the darkness of Khazad Dûm, shadow and flame. And that's what I was thinking.
Are you
when
saying,
they were talking about the monster.
Are you saying the Horde is the Balrog?
It's the Star Trek Balrog.
Okay.
Only not evil. It's not evil.
Oh, it is evil. It's killing people, Neil. It's killed.
Well, I like how, like, when Kirk is talking to, I think, does he bring down the group of red shirts?
Yep.
Definitely.
Actually, that's one of my favorite Star Trek memes I've ever seen. They've got a screenshot of the line of red shirts, and then it says, "This is going to be a bloodbath."
It's going to be a multiracial bloodbath, too. They got people from all over.
Mm-hmm. That is, I believe that's Act 2.
Okay. Anything else from Act 1?
Nope.
Okay. Act 2. Scotty uses duct tape, an empty can of beans, and a garden hose to fix the nuclear reactor. Buying the team precious time to solve this mystery. Spock fixates on the silicon nodule again and hypothesizes that they may be dealing with silicon-based life forms. McCoy scoffs at the idea, but it does seem to explain why the creature is resistant to phaser type 1. Luckily for Kirk and crew, they have phaser type 2. During a quick tour of the mining tunnels, the creature burns and kills a red shirt. Spock and Kirk see the beast for the first time and fire full blast. It takes a bit, but the creature recedes. Having confirmed it's a silicon-based life form, Spock now wants to keep it alive. Kirk refuses to lose more men.
So, I was happy because we get to see Scotty being awesome. Oh, can he rig up a circulating pump? Yeah.
And seriously, that's all he used was duct tape, like a big-ass can of beans, and a garden hose. And it's like, you're fucking MacGyver, Scotty.
Exactly. Oh my god, Scotty is amazing. He's like he is second place, probably. I mean, my heart will always be for McCoy, but Scotty's up there. But so this is when, you know, Spock goes on his hypothesis that the creature is silicone based. And actually, you know, I was thinking about it, and I was like, wow, that's really interesting. It's a very intriguing thought, you know, because all we know is carbon-based life form. Life as we know it, right? But apparently Carl Sagan regarded silicone and germanium as being conceivable alternatives for life to carbon. But carbon just makes more sense because it's plentiful and has the ability to form, you know, complex.
The bonds.
Bonds, yeah. But one day, it would be very interesting to see if something like this could appear in our lifetimes. Yeah,
I wonder what it would look like too, because I mean, like you said, we're used to carbon-based life forms. That makes sense to us.
It looks like a Horda. We've seen it.
I'm so glad it was a Horda. Like as soon as Spock was theorizing about silicon-based life forms, and I'm like, oh my gosh, is it the Horda? Please say it's the Horda. And then when he attacks the one of the red shirts, I heard like the rock rumbly noise. I'm like, oh, it's the Horda. Yes.
Does a Horda appear again later? Like, how do you know about the Horda?
I saw an STO, and when we made our little 5-minute long Kobayashi Maru pleasure cruise barge commercial, we actually had a Horta as the captain. It was pretty ridiculous.
Okay.
We put him in there so I could use the line, "Don't worry, he won't rock the boat."
Rock the boat.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only reason we did that.
That's funny. So, something. Okay, so they're talking about the phasers, and someone's like, certainly not phaser one, which is far less powerful than phaser two. And I was like, yeah, like, not that I know about anything about phasers, but I just kind of was like, stupid.
See, why don't you just add them together, and then you'll have phaser three. I mean, I just...
Da, da, da.
It's a little weird.
If nothing else, just like overload it and then throw it at it like a grenade. And that would work, I think. I don't know.
You know, that would work. And then, of course, you know, McCoy. Oh my God, I love McCoy so much. He is so like everything against Spock says, though.
Yeah.
Like, if Spock said that something was white, McCoy would say it's black. That's just how their relationship is.
Yeah.
But McCoy's like, oh, silicon-based life, no such thing, impossible, blah, 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 blah.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, exactly. And then the crew, like, just adjusts their phasers to the max, and then they go out on a monster hunt.
Well, this is kind of like y'all mentioned. This is the whole, like, where there's a killer monster on the loose, and yet Kirk lines up a whole red shirt army platoon just to go out.
You mean dead shirts?
Pretty much.
Actually,
hey,
it's
they know what they signed up for.
I guess so. But, you know, we get more attack scenes that are hella campy, which I love. And then we see the Horta, right? Mm-hmm. What did you guys, well, you guys were aware of the Horta, I guess, before the original series, or at least you were, Neil. But when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, it looks like a piece of pizza that's been sitting in the fridge for 3 months.
It's the child of Pizza the Hut.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, pizza. You're so delicious.
But yeah, to me, it just looks like a big, kind of moldy piece of pizza.
In the game, they didn't have the little fringe that that one did, but I'm wondering if that's because it was, like, super old, whereas the ones in STO would only be, like, what, 200 years old?
I'm not sure. They actually do look more crystalline, though.
Yeah, so. But I was like, that one was a lot bigger, too, than the ones in
yeah.
STO,
yeah.
Which was interesting. Did they just have a guy that was underneath that was, like... crawling around? Or?
It would make sense.
Actually, here's the story behind the story. Mm-hmm. This whole episode was written around that costume.
That's kind of awesome.
What it is, let's see here. This was designed, built, and worn by Janos Prohaska into producer Gene Kuhn's office. And Kuhn liked the costume so much. That's what inspired him to write Devil in the Dark. So literally, this episode is written around that costume.
That's awesome that somebody can be inspired to write this just from a costume.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome that someone's just like, shit, I made this badass moldy pizza costume. Let me show it off. Hey, check this out, Mr. Kuhn. See him dancing in a Horta outfit in his office. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's it's an amazing costume. I really like it. Although, you know, so the thing is, I think the Horta's hurt at this point, right?
Yeah, part of it gets phasered off.
Gets being blasted off.
And so, you know, Spock's like, oh, well, let me touch it.
I think that comes later when they're actually... No,
he picks it up.
Oh, the part that got shot off.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's what okay. I meant. Yeah, I'm sorry. And I'm like, why would you touch that, Spock? They just say that this thing is, like, acidic. And, like, how do you know that that little piece of back flesh off the Horta is, like, not covered in acid or anything? And then later on, he's like, oh, the creature's body oozes corrosive. And I'm like, you touched it! Why would you do that?
He wasn't wearing the bubble wrap spacesuit gloves.
No. That would have been amazing if he was wearing the bubble wrap spacesuit. But
did y'all notice that the part that was cut off was even moving? It was still moving?
Yeah, it was like the little, like, bubbly,
yeah,
pulsy thing, yeah.
But yeah.
Crazy.
And then, you know, we get a couple more interesting lines. Not the lines of the show, but, you know, Kirk says, there's nothing more dangerous than a wounded animal. And then, of course, you know, Spock, like, sets up the tricorder to search for silicon-based life forms, and they find out that this is the only one within, like, 200 miles or whatever. So probably the only one on the whole freaking planet.
Planet, yeah.
And says, you know, to kill it would be a crime against science.
Yeah, I think that gets into Act 3.
Yeah, and then Kirk's like, nope.
Nope, we gotta kill that thing. So, Act 3. Kirk reinforces that the goal is to shoot to kill when it comes to finding the creature. Spock had originally tried to prepare the men to simply capture it, if possible. Kirk tries to get Spock to go help Scotty, but Spock logics his way out of getting reassigned. The bean can pump fails, and Kirk orders the colony to be evacuated. Some of the guards refuse and insist on joining in the hunt, even if they have only clubs. Kirk finds the room filled with silicon spheres, and Spock warns not to disturb them. After looking around for a while, the Horta collapses a load-bearing column and tries to take out Kirk with falling debris from the ceiling. Kirk then has a face-to-face encounter with the Horta. So, you mentioned the whole crime against science. Would this crime against science be tried in a court of space law?
Yay!
Maybe, perhaps? I don't know. Or is it science law? Ooh, we can take it to science court, but then it'd be all in squiggle vision.
Science court in squiggle vision! So, this is where we see all these red shirts.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. And then,
we are about to die. Salute you.
And then I guess Spock dropped a logic bomb on the captain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what he said.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he was trying, that Kirk was like, I don't know if you're going to kill it, so I'm going to try and get you away from the situation so you won't fuck up people trying to kill it.
Oh, yep.
And I think Kirk was like, well, you know, those red shirts, they're totally expendable. But us two, you know, if we both die, that's fucked up. And then Spock's like, you know, there's this much of a chance that would happen. And so it doesn't really make sense. And Scotty knows way more about nuclear, you know, bean can pumps than I do. So, so I'm staying. And Kirk's like, well, okay, fair enough.
So... You know, when the pump fails, and Vandenberg's like, yeah, we're not going to go to the Enterprise. We're going to sit here and fight.
With clubs.
If they have to. Oh, my God. I just wanted to beat the shit out of someone. Like, really?
To a point, really? I can understand, especially if, like, you know, they're like, this land is our land. Like, we're not gonna move. From where we've settled,
they've also been mining there for a very long time too. So they're totally attached to where they are, and they're proud of what they do. So, and
you know what? It's like staying in your house when it's on fire. I love my home, I love it. But if it's on fire, I'm going to get the fuck out because it's not worth my life.
Well, right, but at the same time, like you're not. Fire's not an actual conscious creature. It's, you know, it just consumes whatever. But
no, I'm saying human beings as conscious creatures, at least Vandenberg and his crew are stupid people for staying somewhere where they're going to get killed. And it's not necessarily the monster at this point.
It's the radiation.
It's the radiation, exactly.
I think if nothing else, they would stay until the very last moment. But they weren't just going to give up without trying to help Kirk get the creature.
Yeah.
But they never really said one way or the other, so I can totally see that.
I just thought that they were dumb. And I noticed, speaking of dumb things, so this was beautiful. Spock and Kirk are by themselves at this point. Did anyone notice, you know, Kirk telling Spock to take the tunnel on the left, but he points his phaser to the right, like, take that left tunnel. He's
the other left.
Did anyone see that? Okay.
I didn't. I didn't pick up on that.
I mean, it was stage left. I guess technically the viewer, he pointed our left.
Do what I say, not what I do.
Exactly.
I do like that this is the point where we actually do hear the dilemma, since this is the only one that they could find. I mean, do they kill something that's been living here for a long time and it goes extinct, or do they save an entire mining operation that is supporting a whole bunch of places? Like, it's
the entire Federation, like,
this yeah,
is like the best, you know, outlet of pergium or whatever it is they're mining.
So
we've
it's
got to get that pergium flowing.
It's almost like a environmental tale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that totally has, like, it reminds me of Mononoke now that you put it in that.
Oh, I love that movie.
That that light. I thought it was great when Kirk finally got to the little mini nest place. And the Horta's like, leading the column over to collapse the ceiling. Yeah, Spock's originally like, dude, you all right? And Kirk's like, no, I'm cool. there's a bunch of little silicon babies laying around. Silicon eggs. And Spock says, I shall quicken my pace. We'd be all laissez-faire about it.
So I love when the monster appears, like coming through the tunnel. Like, I don't know what 60s special effects were back in the 60s, namely because I didn't exist and I don't watch a lot of 60s shows, but I think that must have been some of the best, like, TV special effects for that time.
Mm-hmm. That and, like, the sound was awesome. Like, the sound of the Horta moving, I can
imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
It's
okay,
interesting.
So, yeah, Kirk's caved in.
I was going to say, it's interesting that Kirk, when he meets face-to-face with the Horta, he doesn't actually kill it, even though he's the one that's totally for, like, killing it.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah,
maybe he's just shitting a brick.
He's like, what the fuck is this?
It's like, do I have a Type 1 phaser?
All right, Act 4. Kirk plays red light, green light with the creature and realizes it's not just a beast. Spock arrives just in time and starts a hands-off version of the mind meld. We finally learn the name of the species, the Horta, and that Spock and Kirk's zap attack really, really, really hurt. Spock takes a more hands-on approach, and the Horta uses its juices to spell out no kill eye. Kirk brings in McCoy to try to patch up the Horta while the colony guards get restless. Spock learns that those silicon spheres are actually eggs and that the miners and the guards have been taking them and breaking them. This is why the Horta defended its territory. The angry miners break through and almost kill the Horta until Kirk stops them and tells them that they were the real devil in the dark. The Horta is patched up. Kirk brooks an agreement to sell the Horta children into unpaid slave labor, but at least that, at least the Pergium will flow again, right, guys?
Yeah. So I really like this last act.
I do, except for the whole, they'll work for free. You just got to feed them stuff. It seems like exploitation to me.
What? Well, they made an agreement, remember? It wasn't just, you do this or we kill you.
Stop killing my babies.
Yeah.
I'll stop trying to kill you. But we need a mine. Okay, well, I guess the babies can help.
So, you know, the first scene we get is when Kirk is doing the little shuffle. You know, he's doing the shuffle with the Horta.
The dance.
And so what is more distracting or paralyzing for an Earthman? Giant rock beast or sexy ladies?
What about sexy ladies?
What about giant rock beast sexy lady?
Oh, my God. Well, the Horta technically is like a giant rock beast lady.
Well, there you go.
She's
that's why
maybe a little more acidic. But she could be sexy.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like, how... I'm still not entirely sure how Hortas work. As far as... I mean, they mentioned that they die off every once in a while. Like, the entire race dies off except one. So does that one lay all those cloacas of silicon nodules?
Probably not. There's probably a whole bunch of them that lay eggs, and then
they die. That makes more sense.
Yeah, it would.
Mm-hmm. And then, what is it? Okay, so Kirk realizes that these things are intelligent, right? And then Spock gets there, and Spock's like, we got to kill it now! So, you know, they kind of have a weird role reversal, and then Kirk's like, no! It's sentient. And then, and what I don't understand is, why is this creature, like, willing to give Kirk and Spock a chance, but wants to kill everyone else?
And I think partially because it was hurt and it still wanted to be alive so it could take care of the babies.
Because you remember the miners had type 1 phasers that did nothing to it.
Yeah.
Whereas Kirk and Spock actually had type 2 phasers, and they're like, oh, crap, that actually hurts.
So now it has to, like,
reconsider. That it just came out to, like, beg them for mercy?
I think it came out to protect the eggs, but, like, at the time, Kirk wasn't doing anything to the eggs, and he wasn't, like, immediately shooting it, so he wasn't really a threat, even though I think the Horta didn't trust him.
Yeah.
Which is why when he lowered the phaser, it started moving towards him, and he put the phaser up, he's like, oh, okay, I'll back up.
Yeah. I think the Horta would have been a little more successful in showing its willingness to not kill if it flipped over and let Kirk rub its belly.
While it sprayed acid on his hands?
Yeah. Look, the Horta can't help it if she gets excited. So, anywho.
As long as she's not a...
So you're saying it's
quarter?
Yeah, it's Kirk's bravado.
Kirk's like manliness.
Yeah, that subdued the Horta.
You know what? It could be. I like this theory. I like where you're going with this.
Also, like the Horta's been doing this for 3 weeks. I don't know if they sleep or anything, but I would just be like tired. I'd be like, you know what? Fuck it all.
Well, tired especially. Of this shit. Especially since we find out what she's feeling.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, firstly, anyone get excited when Spock was just like, we joining of two minds or whatever's? I was like, it's mind meld time!
Yeah, but like, he did really, it without touching it. And I was like, is that...
Yeah, no, that was really weird, wasn't it?
He
touches it later.
He's projecting the psychic... or whatever.
It's like a test. Yeah. It's like, hello, anybody there? Oh, hello.
It's like he dipped his toes in the water.
In the pool, yes.
Yeah.
Testing the water.
So, but it was great because he was like, ah, pain, pain. Shatner was practicing that line with Nimoy. I think Nimoy was in the hospital or something at that point, but he was like all unenthusiastic about it. And so Shatner is just like, no, keep going with feeling, right? And so Nimoy started doing that line in his hospital bed, pain, pain. And then William Shatner apparently turned to a nurse and said, will someone get this Vulcan some aspirin? So fun fact, second fun fact, this is also William Shatner's favorite episode. And... he was gone for a lot of the filming due to his father's funeral.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Which is weird because he's in this one quite a bit.
He is, but if you look, like, there's a lot of times where he's back turned or he's far away from the camera. It's a double.
Double. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, anywho's. Okay. So, pain, 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 which is funny. Spock finds out that it's called a Horta, which I was like, it's like a horchata, but not tasty. And then, I like how Kirk gets McCoy to come down, and then this is the first time we hear McCoy say this famous line.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
And we will continue to hear that variations of the same line.
Over and over and over.
Yes, which is great.
Because McCoy loves reminding us.
Yep.
I do like how in the middle of that, we kind of get the sense that I mean, like, the title of this whole episode kind of implies some sort of monster or something.
Mm-hmm.
And from our perspective, we see the Horta as the monster. But I think it's also interesting, too, that it kind of brings up the point that we're kind of the monster to the Horta as well.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, here's the exact line where, you know, if the viewer hasn't got it by now, they'll get it when hearing this line. It's between Vandenberg and Kirk. That thing's killed 50 of my men. And Kirk just shoots back, you killed thousands of her children. And Vandenberg's like,
What?
I
love it because it in a way it reminds me of Frankenstein, which is one of my favorite books ever. And how who the real monster in that book is. It's a difficult question because nobody's like pure good or pure evil.
We're all shades of gray.
Yep. Yep.
Oh,
my. So I apologize for the pun ahead of time. But I was like, I'd like to learn more about horticulture. I think I'd make a good horticulturalist.
I would also like to know more about the horror you are. Also, I was going to say, bringing up the point to where you're talking about where Kirk brings down McCoy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Kirk knows how medical practice works.
He's like, there's a patient. You're a healer. Get to it.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, it was good, though. But here's my favoriteest line in the whole episode. By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day. After he's done healing the Horta.
With spackle. You can hardly see the spackle.
Exactly. But it's, oh my god, it was good. Oh, it was so good. Although I found it interesting to find that eventually Vanderberg and his men did eventually start using clubs. Right? Because the red shirts were trying to hold him off, but they were like, up, back.
God, that one guy in the back got hit like 3 times, and it's like, Jesus, man, he's down. Leave him
just
be.
Go. But yeah, and then what's the traditional ending, right?
Yeah. Well, but before that, like, while Spock was doing the mind meld and McCoy was patching him up, Kirk was like, you guys go over there and help the Horta. I'm going to stay back here and point my phaser at it. Like, there's not much he could do since he can't mind meld and he's not a physician. But it's just kind of like, no, you guys go to the alien. I'll stay back here.
I'll just sit here and watch.
I was also sad because when Spock was doing the mind meld, he was crying. And I was like, don't cry, Spock. Don't do that. That's sad.
This is kind of a sad episode. I mean, throughout most of it, people are dying.
Yeah. You're like, oh, God, what's killing the people? Got to get that thing.
And then when you find out babies are dying of this creature that's trying to, protect it, and it's the only one that's really left, it's just kind of like, Jesus Christ, this is
terrible.
Depressing. Yeah.
What have we done? I will also say that I kind of like the commander for the red shirts. He didn't get a whole lot of lines, but he kind of reminded me a little bit of Chakotay, just the way he carried himself.
Really?
A little bit. Maybe a little bit the way he looks, but just the way he carried himself, he reminded me of Chakotay. Chakotay is from Voyager, Rizia, so you'll know who I'm talking about when you start watching that. And again, the last thing I'll say for this episode is I'm not sure I like how Kirk was like, well, you can just get the Horta to work for you. You'll be rich. And then, like...
He knows a way to a miner's heart.
I guess. But it's like, it so feels like exploitation.
It does. And it's interesting. They leave and then the guy's like, oh, hey, eggs are already beginning to hatch. And then we found more of this stuff. Yeah. And it's... I don't know. You're right. It is exploitation, but I feel like the Horta is intelligent enough where they'll probably get over that real quick.
I mean, it's still technically a symbiotic relationship, but it's just kind of like leaves a bad taste.
It doesn't have to be a symbiotic relationship, though. The Horta are doing fine on their own.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, now that since you bring it up, I don't see what the benefit to the Horta would be except for, you're not crushing my eggs anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. Is that I think
they'll have people to protect them now too,
and to share the colony, share the planet, I should say.
But what if like the Horta get tired or something, or the kids are like, we don't want to work anymore? What are they going to do? Are they going to crush more eggs? Are they going to just use it to like threaten them now?
That's,
oh my goodness,
that's a good question. I
wouldn't put it past miners.
I think somebody should write a fan fiction about that and see what happens.
Listeners,
the Horta uprising.
Or you two, since you guys are already writing some fanfic.
No, I need to do that.
Which is just just get a Horta, put a beret on him, and call him Horta Guevara.
I want to make a... You should totally make that shirt. I was going to say, I'm going to make a Horta pillow.
That'd be cool.
Horta to cuddle.
There is a book in the Star Trek universe that actually has a Horta as a... I don't know if it's a senior officer, but yeah, at least a crewman.
Awesome.
And I really want to read this because I'm like, how does this work?
Plus, we're going to send you into all the dangerous areas that rocks can't survive, but we cannot.
Why are you burning the carpet again? No, there's also an STO you can get a Horta Doff.
To
send on away missions.
As well as a pet.
Yeah, and a pet.
So what did you guys end up rating the episode?
5.
I gave this one a 5 as well.
A 5.
I really, really liked it.
oh, this is the highest rated episode ever by all three of us. And actually, I'm going to be honest, Neil, that surprised me that you gave this a 5 because you're just always so critical.
I almost marked it down because of the ending with the whole exploitation, but, you know, it's still a happy ending.
It is. You know, it's just a great episode because it moves so well.
Yeah.
It really does.
And, well.
And there wasn't any, like, questioning, you know, what's going on or, yeah, it's just.
The sci-fi, the science of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works. It works. All yay! Right. Devil in the Dark.
We all agree on. All right, Sam, what episode we got next?
We have Errand of Mercy as our next episode, and we will go ahead and watch that trailer first.
Captain's log, stardate 3198.4. We have reached Organia and established standard orbit. No signs of hostile activities in this area.
Thank you for your altruistic offer, Captain.
We offer you protection.
We assure you that we are in absolutely no danger.
Out of the way, Organian.
Should one Klingon soldier be killed, 1,000 Organians will die.
What are the odds now?
Less than 7,000 to 1, Captain.
Less than 7,000 to 1. Well, getting better. Getting better.
It has begun.
Yeah, another great episode.
Klingons, fucking finally.
Are you happy, Neil?
I'm very happy.
Well, I'm going to preface this with, since I just woke up and started writing, these aren't as nearly as funny as Neil. Like, literally, there's no humor. I'm just straight to the point.
Okay.
Oh, hey, like me.
So, Errand of Mercy. I'm just going to start with the intro, because it's actually kind of important to separate this from the rest.
Yeah.
So, it's a grim intro for once. We enter with the fall of negotiations with the Klingons, and the Enterprise is en route to Organia to prevent the Klingons from establishing a base. However, they battle with a Klingon cruiser and win, but they get the Code 1 alert that war with the Klingons has started.
Dun, dun, dun!
I think this is actually kind of important because, I didn't know that this was the episode where the war started. Yeah. I always thought they had been fighting before this. So.
I think they had, like, I don't know about skirmishes or, like, a lot of not fighting hostility, but, like, the Klingons mentioned, like, blocking trade routes, hemming them in, like, I guess claiming border colonies so that they couldn't expand without going to war, that they were kind of asking for it. I will say that Kirk knows his history. He mentions Armenia, which is a small country near the, is it the Balkan Sea? Or it's basically, it used to be one of the territories of Soviet Russia, but it was used by a lot of the ancient superpowers, like Rome, the Parthians, even like the Mongols, the Mongolian horde. They all came through Armenia on their little conquest. So it kind of got not invaded, but it was like the strategic place to get to where they wanted to invade. Mm-hmm. And Belgium was the same for World War II with Germany.
You know, if I knew my world history better, this episode has a lot more importance to it, now that you mention all that.
Yeah, that's why the Federation is rushing to be like, okay, guys, we've got to stop them here. Stop.
Yep.
But yeah. Also, I think that I don't know if that was just a small Klingon ship, but it kind of blew up really easily.
Well, it happens.
Yeah. Maybe they got lucky.
I do like how the Klingons are like, fuck you, Enterprise. Pikyu, pikyu,
pikyu. That's exactly how it went.
Pikyu, pikyu, pikyu.
Very good. Canny. Uncanny.
So y'all have to mention the one amazing quote in this intro is...
Curious how often you humans manage to obtain that which you do not want.
Ah, yes, I did like that. It's kind of interesting because he's kind of right.
Yeah.
Like Manhattan Project.
Yeah.
Kind of was a good idea.
And then...
Yes. Then the Cold War happened.
Act 1. Kirk and Spock beam down to the planet, but not before Kirk leaves Sulu in command. After beaming down, they find that no one is surprised at their arrival and are met by Aelborn, who leads them to the Council of Elders. There they discuss the urgency of the situation, but the Organians are not concerned. Trephane, a council member, mentions Klingons have arrived, and Sulu is forced to flee with the Enterprise. This leaves Kirk and Spock stranded with no hope of escape. Will this be Star Trek Die Hard? Question mark.
So the first thing I'm going to say is Organia. Just because it works so many.
Oh, very good. No, the first thing I thought is, why are they always sending the highest ranking officers?
You know.
This is a potential war zone.
Maybe.
Especially when Kirk's like, I'm a soldier, not a diplomat. And it's like, you really need somebody with a diplomatic touch for this.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I was totally going to say maybe they're just trying to create diplomatic relations. But yeah, if he's a soldier, then the fuck.
Also, so when two things. When they first beamed down, we got Green Goats.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was like, hey, look, there's a Cashtal and some Green Goats. This is interesting.
This is awesome. And the other thing I have to comment on is Aelborn. Is that like Dragonborn, but with beer?
Yes.
I don't know, but I'm naming my firstborn child Aelborn.
Your firstborn child's going to have a long name. What was it? Aelborn?
It's up to 237 first names.
Okay.
Beer-o-da! Vomits beer on people.
Oh, I still need to finish playing that. Okay.
Yes, well, okay. I find it interesting that Sulu's left in charge, and yet Scotty's nowhere to be found this time.
I know, right? Because Scotty's typically like the one that is left in charge.
Yeah, you can spread it around, and you know.
I don't know.
But Sulu's helmsman. Where I see Scotty being higher in rank,
especially since their job is to just get the fuck out of there. Like, let the helm focus on the helm. Scotty make the decisions.
So, I was kind of confused in regards... Like, I can understand Organia's importance to the war, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I had several questions when I first saw this episode. And then when I watched the episode for the second time, just because I'm, you know, more aware of the Prime Directive. But I was like, does this planet... Have they even achieved space travel?
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't this plane break the Prime Directive if they don't?
It totally does. Because the Spock mentions that, like, our intel on this was totally wrong. These guys have been this way for, centuries. He said, for millennia, like 10,000 years.
Yeah.
And, but they had assumed that they were just a medieval type civilization. So it's like, why are you guys even going down there?
Yeah,
exactly, right? I was just like, is a threat... I mean, obviously, the threat of this war is so great that it was okay, but, like, how can the culture go on for thousands of years and not advance at all?
There's a problem I have with this episode, but I'll save it for the end.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's weird.
It's kind of interesting that they didn't even try to, like, even blend in with their culture.
Yeah, like, get clothes that match. Like,
yeah, and then try and establish, because I mean, I could understand that a little bit more, but it would still break the whole Prime Directive thing too. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation at the same time.
Yeah, I also thought like the whole Council of Elders. I'm like, you guys are taking this news pretty well.
There's
something's not right here.
No, there's a lot of cues that you get as soon as they beam down.
Yeah.
So.
But everything's like, well, whatever.
We're good.
I also like how Sulu calls them Klingons.
It sounds like a brand of fabric softener, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Or like Scotchgard or something. I don't know.
I was surprised to see fucking four vessels just parked outside, and like that. I'm glad Sulu's like, okay, I should probably get the fuck out of here instead of trying fighting four.
Even though that one was pretty easy to blow up.
Four's a bit much.
Yeah. Don't risk it. So Trephane was the guy that was like, they're here. They're all, the Klingons have arrived.
Yep.
So I was like, how did this guy know that? Do they have like magic powers or something.
Magic powers.
I don't know what to call, you know, space magic, the force, whatever.
Spagic.
It was like, it's magic. But yeah, like he wasn't like looking at like an instrument panel or anything. They didn't have that kind of tech. So I was kind of like, huh, okay, that's.
I'm sorry, Spagic has just got me.
You know, it wasn't even that funny, Sam.
What image conjures in your brain when you hear spagic?
I don't know. It's spatula that's made out of magic. I don't know.
Anyway. That's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's pretty much Act One. There's not a whole lot to it.
No. This episode moves really good, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it does.
Act Two. The Organians give Spock and Kirk native clothing and hide them among their own. And this is where we meet Kor and his troops, or Kor, as he says. He questions the Council and Kirk, only to find nothing but smiles on all their faces. However, he likes Kirk's hatred and gives him the position of liaison to the populace. Later, Kirk and Spock destroy an ammunitions dump and let the Organians know. They are upset, and Kor overhears this conversation.
So, I think it's really nice of the Organians to help hide Kirk and Spock. I mean, you know what? They're just nice in general. But
yeah, but they're also just like total conflict avoidance.
Weird, right? More sheeple.
Yeah.
More sheeple. And then,
at least they don't have disintegration chambers.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like... Yeah, right? So, it's not like... I mean, Kirk is pretty verbal to begin with, but when contrasted with the Organians, like, he is mouthy as fuck.
Yeah. That's what even Kor even mentions, too.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, that gets you a job as a liaison.
One thing I will say about Kor is he has some nasty-looking chin hair. Have you seen that? It's, like, parted sideways. I don't know what he's trying to do with it, but it looks funky.
It's a fashion trend for the 60s future Klingons.
The Klingons.
Klingons.
space Mexicans. I am so happy to finally see this episode because like it's been so long for me.
Mm-hmm.
But after watching, you know, DS9 pretty recently, I'm glad that we got to see Kor.
Dude, I'm so glad you reminded me of that because I really want to watch Blood Oath again now.
It's so good.
Oh, my God. And Kor looks so awesome.
Yeah.
With his ridges, finally. I like that you when you said, how does he pronounce his name? Kor?
I think he says Kor. Yeah.
Kor. So, like, Kor's Light.
That's what I was thinking. So.
I also found it interesting that he did make him Kirk the liaison. I'm like, huh, okay.
Well, he does say... And I quote,
"Honest hatred
smiles. I don't trust the man that smiles too much."
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what really intrigued me in this episode?
Mm.
The mind sifter and or mind ripper.
Mm.
That sounds like something Kirk would want to test out just to see how it works.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he did, but
he's like, well, "Why are you going to make? I want to try it. I want. Yeah, hey, well, how's that work?"
I wish we could have seen a little more about it. And I want to ask you guys, since you've seen a lot more of the Star Trek universe than I have, do we ever see the Mind Ripper again?
Not,
I don't think so.
Not to my knowledge. This is the only kind of mention of this kind
but,
of...
But, okay, so considering how the Klingons operate, that totally could have been something that they didn't invent.
Yeah, that's true.
That could have been something that they just, you know, took over from another... You know, species.
They tend to conquer. I believe their space vessels are also kind of a mash together of stuff that they've collected and a bit of their science.
Like there are a few Klingon scientists, but yeah. It seems like most of what they do is reverse engineer what other people do.
Yeah.
Or make something more deadly. So when they're walking around, you know, and they're talking very loudly about how they want to incite an insurrection.
Yeah.
I was like, Kirk, you're going to give everything away with all your pushing. Like he's like, I'm gonna get you, and Spock's like, hey, sorry, we didn't see you there. Like, I'm gonna fuck that guy up. I'm gonna fuck him up.
Oh my god, this is good. It was what did Kirk say?
You didn't really think I was gonna beat his head in, did you?
I thought you might.
You're right.
Yeah, after dealing with that Klingon. Oh my god, it was good.
Kirk's like,
also,
you're probably
I have to
right.
point out. I want to point out that I love their fur leg warmers.
Oh, Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
Bravely bold, sir.
Garvin.
Yeah.
They take out a weapon depot, don't they?
Sneaky time, go.
Yeah, yeah, and then surprise! The Organians are appalled.
And they put on such a nice fireworks show for them.
They did.
You know, it's just Kirk using a different form of diplomacy with the Klingons. Problem is.
So at this point, like the Organians, like, you understand us, so well, fucking explain it to them. Like, explain what you are. Don't wait till the very end.
Neil.
This is the problem I have with this episode. It's like, you don't understand our ways, and I'm not going to give you any clues as to why we do what we do, but you simply don't understand, young man.
I'll have something to use against that later.
Also, I really like the actor who plays Kor. The way he talked, like, he has very good pacing with his speech. Nothing feels rushed. Like, everything has the perfect amount of emphasis and, like, the amount of time he waits before he starts talking again is, like, perfect. So I really, really, really liked watching him on screen.
Okay, well, I guess I'll get on to X3 then. Kor confronts Kirk and wants to know his identity, but Aelborn tells him he's Kirk. Kor is surprised, and they have a little chat about ideology. Kor seals them away in a prison, but Aelborn frees them. Kor is mad, and he informs everybody that he just killed 200 Organians and will kill two, and 200 more will die unless the feds are brought to him.
Oh, no. So, no surprise, right? Spock and Kirk are held captive at the beginning of this episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know how I mentioned Sheeple earlier? I love how Kor tells Kirk, here we are on a planet of sheep as predators and hunters.
I really enjoyed the conversation between Kirk and Kor here. And I imagine that if, God, I can't even remember his name, but the Romulan from the submarine in space episode.
Oh, it was just Romulan captain.
The Romulan captain. Mm-hmm. If they had a chance to talk, that it would have gone somewhat similarly. Because again, I guess it's that whole bromance thing, but I love it when two people that are fighting on opposite sides,
have respect for each other.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Like, even though you're still fighting, like, you have that, you know, you're not just completely demonizing the enemy. Like, you understand mm-hmm. where they're coming from. I really enjoy that. Also, as far as Klingons go, especially from what I've seen in, you know, next gen on, Kor is very
different.
Very different. He's very considerate of what he says. Mm-hmm. It seems like he doesn't say anything without thinking about it first. So I kind of compare him to being the Picard of Klingons. I don't know if that fits with what everybody else thinks, but I think it fits for him.
So, you know how he's talking about using the Mind Ripper
mm-hmm.
on Kirk and that he would become a vegetable?
Yeah.
What kind of vegetable do you suppose Kirk would be?
Potato.
I'm going to say cucumber.
Kirk-cumber?
Kirk-cucumber.
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 I do like the way that Kor says vegetable.
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 All of the enunciations.
Yep.
Did any of you kind of were surprised that Kirk is so well known throughout the Empire?
Well, look at all the shit he's done.
Well, I know.
And all the women he's done. Like, you can't be such
do
a renegade
without
a Romeo.
Some sort of notoriety.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I was just surprised because I was like, this is, he's, I don't know, whatever.
Well, Well, I mean, it's the flagship, so if the Klingons are any good at military stuff, they're going to have some sort of intel on the flagship of, you know, the big, their biggest threat.
Granted.
Also, like, damn, like, as soon as they escape, Core is like, you know what? It's game over.
Yeah. It's on. Also, I was so surprised that Aelborn helped them escape. He was just like, open the door. Oh, let's go.
Those other people will visit violence upon you. We simply can't allow that.
Can't allow it. And then, Core, like, gets all mad and she's like, boom, 200 of you fuckers are dead. And then there's, like, no response. It's like, okay, so you were upset because you're going to get all violent on Kirk and Spock, yet 200 of your people died, allegedly.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, nothing's changed. Everything's fine.
Yep, but I guess we'll find out about that in a moment.
You simply don't understand us. You understand so little about us. Have fun figuring it out.
So this whole episode was just frustrating to you then, Neil?
A little bit, yes. Except, okay. It was confusing up until this point, and then at the very end I was like table flipping, like, really?
Well, I totally see you flipping a table. Like, after watching this, but only after watching this.
Yeah.
I guess that means we'll get into Act 4. Kirk won't let this stand. He and Spock head out to Kor's stronghold. They find where Kor's office is, and then they chat again about war. This gives Kor's troops time to barge in with all their weapons. But all their weapons are too hot to handle, and they are unable to fight. Aelborn steps in and informs them that they have stopped all war between the two factions. He tells them that they will ally with each other someday, but Kor and Kirk refuse. As Kor plans to overtake the Organians, they turn into bright lights and disappear. Spock suggests that they were beings of pure energy. Since no one can fight, everyone parts peacefully.
So, but before that, there's a little confrontation between Kirk and the council. And, you know, Kirk gets his weapons back, and he's like, you know what? I don't like you guys. I don't like your culture. I don't like your planet. But I'm going to go die for you because that's my job. And
such
I hope
a drama
you...
queen. what did he say? In an attempt to show you that there are things worth dying for?
Yes. That's what he said. At that point, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with these guys? And they get up and they're like, such brave men, yes, but foolish. And it's like, ugh, you fucking old people. Just, like, why are you letting him do this?
Yes. And then they just kind of let him take the phasers. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. They're not stopping him.
Later. And it seems like they have some sort of premonition powers where it's like, so what are they going to do? They'll wait till night and then, violence. Yeah, it's so disgusting.
Exactly. I like your hoity-toity, like, rich man voice. It's pretty good.
I use it a lot. I talk to myself in the car.
Do you use, like, your normal talking voice? Rich man voice?
No, it's just the rich man talking to himself.
Oh, okay.
That's who I wish I could. Until if I'm rich, I'm eccentric. But for now, I'm just crazy. I love Spock's approximation.
Yes.
Oh my god, it was good.
Spock, can we get those two guards? What would you say the odds are on our getting out of here?
Difficult to be precise, Captain. I should say approximately 7,824.7 to 1.
Difficult to be precise. 7,824 to 1.
7,824.7 to 1.
That's a pretty close approximation.
I endeavor to be accurate.
You do quite well.
To one. And that 0.7 makes a big difference, by the way. Yeah. And then he does... He gets more precise a couple lines later, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, they come back to it. They're like, what are our chances now? And he's like, was it like less than 7,000 to 1? He's like, okay, that's, you know... So when they're on their little sneaky mission, infiltration... I watched this part twice because as far as just the getting into the thing, because that when they took out the guards, I wanted to watch that the Klingon guard number two do the stair tumble, because I think he did a pretty good job.
Oh, right.
It looked pretty good for being stunned. Like, I hope he didn't get too hurt, but it looked like he took it pretty well. But also when Kirk's like, here, hold my phaser. I'm gonna use my waist stringy thing to choke this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, did the two guards that were walking in front of that lieutenant dude, like, not hear?
I know, right? I was like, look, I understand that you can be stealthy, but you're not that fucking stealthy. You can't choke the shit out of someone that's gurgling when his comrades are like
3 feet.
Not even more than, yeah.
Yeah. Little bit of suspension of disbelief, but it's okay. I mean, they could have just phasered two of them, and then one would be like, oh, phaser, okay, he's down. That would have worked, too.
We're getting closer to, like, my favorite scene in the show.
Is this when they're in the Corps office?
Yeah. They all, like, dropping their weapons,
oh,
right?
Okay. One thing before that, when Corps, you know, he's monologuing to Saul. And he sounds like a Borg at one point. He's like, yeah. We are part of a greater whole. We are all part of a unit. I was like, huh, that's kind of Borg behavior, if you think about it. But yes. Then the hotness happens.
Hot. Na. You know what? I just like this scene because it's just, like, ridiculous. You don't exactly know what's going on at first.
Yeah.
And then everyone drops their weapons and they're like, all right, we're going to fist fight. I can't touch you. you're made out of love.
It's like startled goats.
Yeah,
like,
and then the fact
what's
that
happening?
This exactly right. Those damn green goats. And then the same thing's going up. You know, going on up above them. Mm-hmm. What is it?
I wonder how many takes they did with that, because that would be a fun day of filming.
I'd imagine there was mariachi music playing. I don't know. It's just the way they did it. It was good. But you know, a couple interesting things after this scene. Firstly, okay, so we find out more about the Organians, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Organians are talking to them, and he's just like, well, I'm simultaneously on, you know, each of your home worlds demanding that there be a truce, blah, 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 blah. And Kirk and Cora are upset. They're like, no, you can't do this to us. We got a job to do, blah, blah, blah. And you realize that Klingons and humans are not too different at all. And then
loath to admit it.
Exactly. And what's interesting is Aelborn's like, it is true that in the future you and the Klingons will become fast friends.
Impossible.
You work together. And then they're all like, you know. But yeah. I'm in DS9 and it's just like, yeah, they were right.
It's kind of interesting because I mean, Kirk started my mind thinking this way when he brought up Belgium for World War II. I'm like, this kind of has a lot of parallels with World War II. As far as the whole Belgium reference, you have the Klingons and the Federation, which might as well be Japan and USA, because we are like super, well, not like super allied with Japan, but we are economically like, I almost want to say dependent on them. To be innovators of technology. So, and another thing here is this is another thing I have a problem with Aelborn and his people. He's like, you have no right. We have the right to what? War? You know, killing millions of innocent people? And it's like, you know what, Aelborn? Sometimes war is the answer. It sucks. But there you have it. World War II. Europe would have been like completely screwed if the U.S. hadn't have entered. Which we were kind of forced to by Japan. But sometimes you have to. Like, there's no way around that.
It's just the way we are as humans.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, at this point, Organians had evolved well beyond that point. So maybe they just forgot or don't understand anymore.
Which is what Kirk was trying to show them, I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah. It's just like, you know, it cracks me up that they're so advanced, right? They don't need a corporeal form, yet they're still on the planet, like near this medieval castle with green goats living peasant lives. Like, are you that bored? Is that their version of like playing Sims all day?
So, yeah.
And I just want to point out, right? So they're like, oh, hot potato, right? Why did they let that one Klingon get choked out earlier?
Well, he wasn't like killed, but
it was still violent.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, oh, so now you fucking explain why we don't understand how you. Why didn't you tell us this earlier? You could have saved us so much time. Also, yeah.
We just go through the episodes thinking that the Organians are just huge floppy pussies.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So,
and then we find out they're badass later, but not that badass.
Here's the problem I have here. So if they're made of pure energy, they don't need a corporeal form, they don't believe in violence, why are they on a planet that they know that two different factions are going to fight over? Why even be there at all?
Because they want to affect the timeline of the universe.
Why? Why even insert yourselves?
Why bother?
They just have
no concept of the Prime Directive, and they just don't give a fuck. They're like, look, okay, these are people that have green goats. That's their living.
Green eggs
it's
and
green
ham.
Goats.
I think Riz is onto something. I think they're just playing Sims, and they're like, oh,
no,
crap.
But that one guy said that interfering in other people's businesses. They find that disgusting, but you guys forced us to. Well, if you're so energy being and you don't need a corporeal form, why are you even here? We didn't force you to live here. You chose to live here, and you don't have to.
Oh, they let it happen. It sounds like they knew what was going on. And I agree. I think there's more to the Organians than what we're seeing here.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
So I also think that if they really didn't believe in violence, they could have just told them what they were and why this whole thing was pointless. And then it would have been like, okay, well, display your power or whatever. And then they would have been like, okay, well, we can't do anything about this. Instead of having them run around, blow shit up, and do all this other stuff. And it's like, why did you not just tell them earlier?
I really just think that they were bored.
That's a terrible excuse.
It is.
They're such trolls, too. It's like, peace, we're out. Blue, 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 blue.
Sorry. When they got all super bright and then they disappeared, did anyone think of Madonna's song Vogue when Kirk and Cor put their hands to their faces and were like, da, da, na, 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 Vogue.
I didn't, but I don't know if I've seen that music video. So.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
What? Sam, how have you not seen Madonna's Vogue?
I don't really pay attention to music that much.
You are so not that gay.
No, I just don't pay attention to music that much. Brandon's the one that pays attention to music more than I do.
That song's been out since before you were born.
I know. But we all kind of like, oh god, here's another godlike species.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's why I was like, why are you doing this, people?
Yeah. I think the ending. Oh my gosh. So with all this the questions we have about the Organians, and I think that the very last line, as the episode's closing, kind of sums it up the best. Right? It just kind of shows how little control they have. Let's see here. Oh, God. I know it was Spock and Kirk. I just don't know who said what line. But I'm just going to say the lines anyways. You have nothing to be ashamed of. We did, after all, beat the odds. I guess that's Spock that's saying that.
I think it was beat the gods, because they were comparing them to...
No. No, it's odds. Sure? You and I have nothing to be ashamed of. We did, after all, beat the odds. Oh, no, Mr. Spock. We didn't beat the odds. We didn't have a chance. The Organians raided the game.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
It just kind of shows, how humans are just minor players or actors in this huge stage.
Hmm.
Called the galaxy that none of the higher ups really ever seem to affect at all in any tangible way.
No.
They're just watching, like the gods of Greece.
However,
yep, speaking of,
However, I am kind of upset at Kirk when he just suddenly realizes that he's not the hot shit species that he thinks he is, and he makes that whole line. I'm like, dude, how many other godlike beings have you run across until you finally realize your place in the universe? Like,
oh man, you should have like been thankful it wasn't another Trelane.
I know, right? Ugh. God damn it.
Yeah.
But that's it. I really do like this episode, although there's just too many questions for me to give it a 5.
Would you give it instead?
4. I still like the episode.
I give it a 4 as well.
It's just, I'm just so frustrated by the Organians and how they're just kind of back and forth on everything. And like, well, what if this is this and this, then why did this and this happen, right? It's, frustrating.
It is. It really is.
It's just too open.
I loved everything else, though. I loved Kor. I loved finally being introduced to the Klingons, the fact that this is kind of important in the Star Trek timeline, because this is when the war, the Klingon Federation war, actually starts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of big deal. And everything else about the episode is fine, except it's fucking Organians.
Well, you guys will be impressed to hear that they show up again.
Really?
The Organians?
Yep.
What?
Does Kirk punch them in the face?
No. They show up in Enterprise.
Really? Oh.
Oh, Enterprise. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, I won't give out too much, but we get a little bit more on their backstory. Not very much.
So what you're telling me is don't Google Organians to learn more about them.
Just like you shouldn't Google Klingons and how they look like they do.
Look, that question has been eating away at my soul for the past, like, however long since it's been since I've seen that episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, look how long it's been eating away at the rest of the fan base before they actually answered it.
I don't care.
Okay, I'm just saying. We've been waiting a long time for this, so.
So I should have to wait, like, another 20 years?
Not 20.
Before I learn the answer of that? You know, that's just how long the other people have been waiting. Right?
Yes, you must suffer such as we have suffered.
My point is, it's kind of big, and it'll be interesting when you watch Enterprise. Okay, well, never mind. Enterprise is now kind of, whatever.
Yeah.
I might watch Enterprise next.
You could.
Because it's before...
It's before the Federation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Just to get back onto the timeline, yeah. I suppose.
Would you rate it, Sam?
I rate it 4.
Okay. We all agree on it.
I was agreeing with you all that there are problems, but it's very important, and the players are amazing.
Yes. All right. I guess that wraps up this week. Our next episodes are going to be The Alternative Factor. And The City on the Edge of Forever. Is that like the Star Trek version of A Room with a View from Hell?
No.
Oh.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, gentlemen, this is the last 2 episodes of the first season.
No.
There's one more after that called Operation Annihilate.
Yep.
Oh, that means in a couple weeks we get to end with the start of season 2.
City on the Edge of Forever is arguably the best TOS episode by like everybody.
Really?
Arguably. So like that's usually what everybody says is
their favorite.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So you'll get to.
We'll see if anything competes Romulan and Federation submarines in space, because. That's like niche market there for me.
I think so.
Well, cool. I can't wait. Until next week, though, as usual, you guys have any comments, questions, whatever, find us on Facebook. Comment, like, share. And we will see you all next week.
Bye.